Very good morning, everyone. It is Monday, November 21. You are listening to the Big Sports Breakfast on Sky Sports Radio. And this morning, the World Cup underway. And Ecuador beat Qatar 2-0 in the opening match of the tournament. Disappointing performance, Mossy reported to us earlier from the host nation. And Mossy will be speaking to all throughout the tournament over there in Qatar. And we're just 2 days away. Well, today. In 48 hours' time, the Socceroos will be playing against France. And unfortunate news, though, in that Martin Boyle's out after he's failed to overcome a knee injury. So Melbourne City midfielder Marco Tilio, who'd already flown over, he takes his place in the squad. Also, Aidan Hrustic and Harry Suter are improving. So good news for those two. But Graham Arnold said that Hrustic would play a role off the bench against France and then be available to start against Tunisia. And that Tunisia game is Saturday night, our time, 9 p.m. Bad news for France, so hopefully good news for the Socceroos. But Karim Benzema, the Ballon d'Or winner, he's out for the tournament, a thigh injury. The market with TAB has France $1.30, the Socceroos $10, the draw paying $5.50 in that match Wednesday morning. Just some results this morning. Formula One Grand Prix, the season ender in Abu Dhabi. Max Verstappen won, beating Charles Leclerc and Sergio Perez. Aussie Daniel Ricciardo in his last drive for the McLaren side, and who knows, maybe in Formula One, finished ninth. Sebastian Vettel retires, finishing 10th as well this morning. Last night, the DP World Tour Championship final round, John Rahm won the tournament, 20 under par, won by two strokes. But Rory McIlroy finished top of the standings on that tour after finishing fourth and four shots off the pace in the season ender at 16 under par. The Kangaroos 30-10 over Samoa on the weekend. The World Cup final, the Gillaroos 54-4 against New Zealand. Also at Old Trafford. How are you, Buzz?
Oh, I'm good. It's my mate Clarkie on holidays again.
On a little, yeah, a little vacay here in Queensland. So we got the other Clark in.
You got the spark Clark.
Hello, mate. How you doing? Bill.
Oh, you guys are Shire buddies, of course, aren't you?
We live down the Shire, mate. Yeah. We live in God's country down there. See, I always see Buzz walking the dog, or the dog walking Buzz, one or the other. I can't work it out.
Yeah.
Same area, boys, are you?
Yeah, mate. Old Shire, mate. Big Sharkies fans. That's why Buzz writes the good stuff about the Sharks, mate. We're massive fans.
So in summertime, how does Buzz walk down the Esplanade? Is he got singlet on? Or what is he?
Strut.
What does he look like? Bawdy singlet?
Bawdy singlet, guns out.
I can assure you the guns aren't out. Yeah. I'd love to get me exercise. But anyway, onto the footy, eh?
Good on you. Australia, I think we all thought that Australia would win, Buzz, and they did exactly that. What a good performance, 30-10 against Samoa.
Yeah, terrific performance, Loz. And look, I can't speak highly enough of the way Mal Meninga has pulled this side together. And I've written today that I think the Kangaroos are now the benchmark of all the codes in world football, more so even than the All Blacks, who are on a decline, now rated number three in rugby union. They've lost four test matches this year. If there is an invincible side, it is the Kangaroos. And so much credit has to go to Mal Meninga. And I remember sitting down with Mal for his interview when he first started with this team in 2016. And he spoke about his desperation to put the aura and the pride back into that Australian jersey. And he sat down with Cam Smith and Billy Slater and Jonathan Thurston. And at that time, I thought it wasn't properly valued, the green and gold jersey. All the talk in rugby league was about New South Wales, Queensland, Maroons, Blues, Origin each year, highest rating show on TV. And that's what Mal set out to do, was to put that jersey back where it should be as the number one thing. The way he's pulled this side together, and guys, consider only 4 months ago, they were belting the tripe out of each other in Origin. There was serious dislike between the two teams. It's incredible with the egos he has in that side, the superstars he had in that side, that there was not one report out of England of any drama, or that they just became this really tight-knit outfit. And look, they probably didn't play magnificently. The first half of the World Cup final was outstanding, but you know, there was a lot of ring rust there, wasn't there? They hadn't played for, what, since 2019. But, geez, I give Mal a lot of credit.
Yeah, he deserves it. We've known him as the State of Origin coach, where he had a terrific run with that Queensland team and brought them together, and he's done exactly the same thing with the Australian team. And I thought they got better as the series went on. Once they got through New Zealand, I always expected them to win the final, but it was always going to be tough against the Kiwis. But
Lodge, you look at the player that he used, like Ado Carr, unwanted origin, Jack Wighton, not wanted game three origin, Regan Campbell, unwanted origin. They still tell me if Freddie had gone banging on Latrell's door for game three and tried a little bit harder, Latrell would have played. So these are guys that weren't required early in the year, and they just stepped up. And I think Ado Carr was the player of the tour. And I think he's clearly now the number one winger in rugby league.
All reports over there were that he was exceptional and the fans gravitated towards him. And he scored 12 tries throughout that tournament. I think he equaled Valentine Holmes' record in the 2017 World Cup. But, he's taken on a leadership role as well. He is a guy that has this enthusiasm about him that others feed off. And you're right, Buzz. I think he was probably the standout player for Australia on that tour.
Yeah, you don't often say that about wingers, do you? But you even dig a bit deeper and you look at a player like Daly Cherry Evans, and you know he's old, he took his demotion so well. Everyone has been raving about him as a tourist and how he's got in there and supported Cleary and supported the halves at training and just done everything required of him to fit into that squad so well. And it's about the values that I've spoken about in the paper today, their motto, that you know, that they play for the people they love. They stand tall. The jersey's bigger than any player, bigger than any ego. And look, it's just a great thing for international rugby league.
Certainly is. What about the future of the scheduling of these games, mate? It's the World Cups are every 4 years, yes, but there's a lot of talk around about how to and where to and how do you keep the players fresh and whatnot.
Yeah, it's really interesting, Clarkie. We sit round every year and every November we wait to get our NRL schedule for next year. But I think more thought, more creativity, more time needs to be put into a regular international schedule. And we'd like to see, as far as I'm concerned, more Samoa, more Tonga, more Fiji, Kiwis, Australia, and all the good nations, England. But it's also for the developing sides as well, and the PNGs and the French. And I think what this tournament has shown, we've got seven or eight really competitive countries, and to build the next World Cup, I think we need to go that next level and try and get another couple of countries up to speed. And it's so important. We put aside all of October every year for a test match carnival, and you play Australia, England, you play Samoa, Tonga, you play. I just think it needs a lot more thought than it gets right now. I'm sure the broadcasters have latched onto it. I know Fox Sports, even though it was played in a very unfriendly time slot, are very happy with the ratings they've received so far.
Yeah, I think you're right there, Buzz. I think you know, we need to get international football back up and running and to have a better schedule than what we've had previously. But I'm just wondering how that all goes down, you know, with the CBA not being done now, and if you all of a sudden spring these extra games onto the players, how they will feel. So I just don't know where it's all at. But I'm a big believer in representative football. And playing more now that these, you know, Pacific Island nations are going to only get stronger and stronger.
Yeah, look, eventually, once they do get a schedule right, I think a CBA will encompass an end-of-year tournament each year. And hopefully will ensure that not just the Australian players have played well and that all the boys who have committed to Samoa and Tonga and the other countries with so much passion brought up the speed and are properly compensated, but, you know, for their efforts.
Now, we're going to have an interesting couple of weeks, Buzz, with a lot of these big, you know, players at the World Cup having to make decisions on their future as they come off contract, a lot of them next year, of course. Joseph Swali, he's going to be one to watch. Stephen Crichton certainly made a name. Well, we know he's a big game player as it is, but probably put his value even further up after his performances for Samoa at the World Cup and other players as well.
Yeah, really interesting. Latrell Mitchell arrives home tomorrow. And before he heads up to that farm in Taree for a really, really well-earned break, he'll need to sit down with South Sydney and nut out the final details of his contract long-term. Look, I think he's all but agreed, but there's still a few details and third parties they need to work out that will ensure that Latrell becomes one of the highest paid players in the game, and he certainly deserves to be there on his day. I don't think there's a better footballer in the competition. I stress on his day because he's probably not as consistent as some of the players ranked a little bit higher than him. Matt Burton at the Bulldogs has got a big offer sitting there from Phil Gould. Look, I think he'll stay, but they certainly need to bump up his money. Joseph Sualihi, really, really interesting one. He's a year-by-year player at the Roosters. He's free at the end of next season. He has a player option in his favour.
He's going to be some sort of player, Buzz.
Yeah.
Oh, wasn't he fantastic over there? Yeah. Look, you know what? I'm doing my top 50 players in the comp, and I'm sure you'll tear it apart like you usually do. But I've ranked Sualihi at around number 15. It's ranked on his entire season and what he did on the wing, but also what he did on the World Cup. But I've said in my comment there that would not surprise me that in 3 years, we talked about him as number one in the game. That's the potential of the man, the athlete that he is. The other interesting one is Stephen Crichton at Penrith, who had a fantastic year and a great series for Samoa. You know what? I think in a few weeks' time, it'll be a big story. I think we'll be writing about him joining the Canterbury Bulldogs for 2024. He would love to stay at Penrith, but they're so top-heavy in their cap with great players. They can't keep them all, as they showed with Billy Kickow and Appy Coruscant. Yeah, and I think Crichton will have one more year at Penrith next year, then join the Bulldogs as their fullback moving ahead.
Buzz, if I'm a Parramatta supporter, am I reading into, or am I concerned that we could lose Mitchell Moses or Dylan Brown, given that they're both off contract at the end of next year and neither has committed to the club yet?
Yeah, it's an interesting look, I think Parramatta have botched this a little bit. You should never have your two gun halves coming off contract at the same time. You should stagger them. Look, I think Dylan Brown's certain to stay. I really do. Mitchell Moses is the one I am worried about. What I'm told is his manager went to the Eels about 3 months before mid-year and offered to do a deal back then. Parramatta were not happy with the money and said, oh, let's let it play out. We'll wait until the end of the year. Well, I can tell you now the money has gone up substantially since Parramatta had that opportunity to sign Mitchell mid-year. I've got to fear, look, the West Tigers have gone very, very heavy for him. And the Canterbury Bulldogs, has been well published, have gone very, very heavy for him. Obviously, he can't go next season. I think, though, that the Canterbury and Gus and Cameron Serraldo and their management will throw the kitchen sink at him. They do not have a standout captain for next year, the Bulldogs, and I wouldn't be surprised at all if they threw in the captaincy for Mitchell Moses as to try to convince him to sign. So, but he loves Parramatta, doesn't he? He grew up there before he went to West. Before he went to the Tigers, he played his junior football in the Eels, Harold Matz, SG Ball, etc. But if he's going to leave, I'd suggest it would be the Bulldogs with a captaincy next to his name.
Certainly be a big change. Hey, we can't go without asking about the Gillaroos. They were magnificent throughout the whole tournament and got the Bickies in the final as well.
You have your heroes and villains. I have my highlights and lowlights. And the highlight of my weekend, I sat up and watched both games. The Gillaroos, 54-4 victory in the World Cup final. A wonderful day for Australian Rugby League, for the women. I really don't know of too many female sporting teams in the world that have won a cup final with such dominance. I think on the back of the growth of the NRLW, there was a massive opportunity for rugby league to market this Gillaroos side, to really, really get behind them and the wonderful players in the side. I think if they can get their salary cap and their CBA right, the growth of the game in the parks and the junior rugby league, etc., I just think it's huge. I really, really do. And look, that's a great Australian cricket team we had. When did they win the T20 World Cup final in Melbourne, Clarkey, last year, this year?
No, it was 19, 18.
20. 20, 20. Yeah. It was just before the pandemic.
Just before the pandemic. Yeah. I was trying to work out what it was.
Yeah, look, and I know rugby league's an eastern seaboard game and then played in the rugby league country, so I just think there's a massive opportunity to market this side that'll convince even more young ladies to put on the boots, put on the footy gear and play rugby league. They're a great side to watch. They play a fantastic brand of football, and good on them for that magnificent performance in England.
Buzz, thank you so much, mate.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Let's talk next week, eh?
Lengthy heroes and villains text here from John from Wingham, and interested in the boys' thoughts, so particularly on his villain. But g'day, Loz, Stu and Middo. Heroes James Tedesco. I go back to the days of Les Johns and Graham Lenglands, and Teddy is at least the equal of any fullback I've seen. He's already achieved so much in the game. Villains. Are the people saying that the Australian cricket team is on the nose? Some stats, it's proven that cricket in October, November has never drawn crowds. In the late 90s, a series against the West Indies, which included Brian Lara, etc., actually drew less crowds than this series against England. If it's not Latrell Mitchell, it's David Warner. If it's not Novak Djokovic, it's Pat Cummins. We're becoming a nation of whingers. And if we dropped all the players involved in that fateful day in South Africa, the results would be diabolical and the same whingers would be screaming for their return, says John from Wingham. But are we overplaying the lack of crowds for for these one days, particularly against England? Even, you could say, the 2020 World Cup and the Australian Games as well, particularly the last game against Afghanistan at Adelaide Oval.
I think he makes a valid point. I don't know if whether the Australian cricket team's on the nose or not. That'd be more a Cricket Australia focus group type thing and a bit in the papers, whether that's true or not. But you're right, cricket season... And we're trying to break a psyche of what we're used to. And, you know, these T20 World come in October. Usually the test matches will be your first thing.
Which is like the 30th of November. Yeah. Yeah. So when we're probably really accustomed to, season, test match.
October is always a pretty, not a lot going on type month in sport in general. And it used to be like sort of the Melbourne Cup. And then everyone would get into their cricket season. It was sort of the... I don't know if people are on the nose, and I just think they've got a finite amount of money to spend. So if you go to the World Cup, you can't go to the... People just don't have oodles of money. And tickets are expensive, mate. They don't all get to go and sit in the corporate boxes and live the high life. You go out and sit in the outer out there and, Mossy's, wherever Mossy got his beer from, but it's $13 a beer or $12 a beer or whatever it is. And, it's not cheap to go to the cricket.
No, you're right, but there's so many games of cricket on.
There's so many on, that's what I mean.
You can pick and choose. You can't go to every one because it's too expensive.
It's too expensive. The other thing with it is, mate, do you really want to go to every game? Especially with the coverage you get on TV now. You can sit there, you get commentary, you get to sit there and watch. You watch the replays, you can throw your remote at the screen when the umpire gives a shocker. You got to drive out there, you got to find somewhere to park, you do all that sort of stuff that goes with it. And it's a great experience. But the other thing to remember, these three one days, they don't actually mean anything. Like, they're just three games because the futures tours, if we play three in England, they've got to come here and play three. I think that's where they've got to look at it from a holistic
point
of
view. Well, put it this way. If you're England, you're not sitting in that dressing shed on Saturday night after losing game two shattered that you've lost to Australia.
No.
You're, and the same could be said for Australia. You're not sitting there after it in the shed having a beer going, geez, where'd it go wrong, boys? What do we need to do? Well, that just doesn't happen.
Think about it, but if you use rugby league, remember they used to have the mid-year test?
Yeah.
That don't happen anymore because it didn't mean anything to anyone. And then if they even got rid of the Anzac test, Australia v New Zealand, that doesn't exist anymore, does it?
No. Well, they play the club games.
They play the club games. So there's better ways to do things. Soccer friendlies when, you know, Australia play whoever. Oh, you know, it doesn't, because there's no context to it. People sit back and go, oh, whatever. There's no passion from the player. Well, sorry.
There's always passion from the player.
The players are playing for their country and they want to do really well.
But it's sort of, I don't know, it's just struck me the other day and this morning when I mentioned it. Like, I just thought of it because you were talking about how many games they play. It's like a tennis player these days, that they want to win, but you've got to accept you're going to lose, and you've just got to move on pretty quickly. And Glenn Maxwell was criticised heavily after the T20 World Cup, and he probably shouldn't have said what he said.
He used the wrong words.
That's the way he was thinking. But after a tournament as big as a World Cup, you need to be concerned.
Yeah, correct.
It's different, I suppose. He could have got away with it if he said it with these one days.
Yeah.
But at the T20 World Cup, where everyone's coming together.
Where we're all building to.
That's
the problem with it. There's no right answer to that question, unfortunately, at the moment.
Time for a quick call. Steve, you got a heroes and villain for us? Good morning, mate. How are you?
Yeah, well, boys. How you going?
Yeah, pretty good, thanks. What do you got?
Mate, quick one. Hero has to be Mal's magical numbering system.
Oh, yeah, we spoke about that a lot at the start of the tournament. In Mal's defence, that number had to be allocated to that player for the whole tournament.
Yeah, exactly. But no one knew who was what. The players didn't know. Yeah, it was sheer brilliance.
Yep. What about your villain?
When I saw the 13-centimetre in goal at Old Trafford the other night, I thought that there's surely some danger there. Like, it made Cogra look like the SCG.
And like Loz said earlier, it's the drop off as well.
Yeah.
But the whole game was played different. Like, when someone runs through a gap and they're going to score a try, they run at 100 mile an hour and dive 25 metres. Like, Tedesco twice the other night, he pulled up at the quarterway line. Because they genuinely had a fear in the back of their head.
No doubt.
So it changed the whole game. I don't know if it was for the good. Hey, can I very quickly mention something about Origin and international football?
Go.
So Buzz said that we need to have more international football, and we absolutely do, but that's the International Rugby League's problem. It's not the NRL's problem. Mm-hmm. What the NRL's problem is to maximise the talent it has under their contracts. So is it feasible? And I'm just putting it out there.
Mm-hmm.
Keep Origin at the end of the year. Have it as a post-game thing. Therefore, teams aren't depleted during the year, which has always been an issue. But run a concurrent series. You could have the Northern Hemisphere versus Pacifica versus the North Island and the South Island of New Zealand. Each Origin game, three standalone games, New South Wales, Queensland, bang, there's 3 weeks. There's no more weeks of television. But you could run a round robin with the other four.
Yeah, you probably could, but you probably have more players involved in that. And the issue will always come back to the clubs and the players and how much money it's going to drive into the game. Broadcasting partners, there's a lot of things that need to be discussed. I think, me personally, and I've said this from day one, Origin doesn't need to change. International football needs to change.
It's worth the amount of scheduling for that. Origin's worth way too much money to them.
Novak Djokovic has equaled Roger Federer with his sixth ATP finals title. And the 35-year-old Serb, he beat Casper Ruud 7-5-6-3 in Turin this morning to equal Federer's mark. Now we're in the golf and this RSM Classic over on the PGA Tour. Canadian Adam Svensson. Looks like he's going to seal victory here. He's 19 under par, 2 strokes clear of the chasing pack of three. Best of the Aussies was Aaron Baddeley, wasn't it? Yes, it was. 9 under for the tournament. And so he's 10 shots off the pace in that DP World Tour Championship. over in Dubai. John Rahm won 20 under par. And Rory McIlroy, though, he finished over on top of the rankings overall, finishing fourth. Stewie Clark joining us this morning, by the way. If you're just tuning in, Pup's back tomorrow after having a weekend away.
I know the live golf thing's disappointing for fans, but for someone like Aaron Baddeley, I'm sure he's not disappointed because he was sort of knocking around, getting starts where he could, and now he's playing in, he's going to get the opportunity to play in more tournaments because half the field's been taken away and he's aligned with the PGA. That'll get him more starts and make him a few more bucks, you would have thought, along the way.
The thing about the Live Tour is having tournaments here, though.
Yeah.
And getting those big names here, that's something that's been missing in Australian golf for a long time.
Other than when there was a President's Cup on, they were coming down. And then sort of using the Australian Open as preparation. You know, even when Tiger came out in 08 or 09 or whatever it was, it was a preparation for something in the lead up to it. So to get those guys back down here, whoever they may be, and look, if it brings about change in the PGA, if they come together at some stage, so the PGA just don't have complete control of the golf tournament, it's not a bad thing. You just hope it comes back. And look, I'm not going to get into the whole money argument and the whole, where the money's coming from, because I think that's been done to death, but they've got to find a way to bring both tours back together.
Yeah, they really do. There's a lot of animosity at the moment, though.
I found it funny, Rory McIlroy came out and said, Greg Norman's got to resign.
And exit stage left, he said.
Does that mean the head of the PGA has to exit stage right? Because you can't, if you're going to get rid of Greg, surely animosity can't be just one-sided. There's got to be animosity from both sides.
No, exactly right. I mean, not everyone has to agree with what's happened and how it's happened. Yeah. But I think both parties would certainly, that are playing in terms of the players, would look at it and go, well, it's been good for the players because they're now starting to get 100%. More money. I know they've always been paid very well.
World Series
but
cricket.
But now, with competition, it's opened themselves up to having other revenues come into the sport and other ways of generating money and trying to change people's perception of golf and trying to make it a bit more rock and roll, which Liv are all about. And again, it mightn't be everyone's cup of tea, but we've seen with all sports, if you don't innovate, you can be stagnant and you don't grow and you don't get people to support it. Yet I think that's what they've tried to do, is make it for not you and me who have been brought up watching golf a certain way. There'll be young kids that'll look at this and think, well, that's pretty cool to go to a golf game where there's a bit of music happening and it's a shotgun
start. A bit different. Mate, World Series cricket, Super League, it's happened in numerous sports.
Well, there's been absolute devastation, as we've seen on the pictures of the news in the central west. Yugara, I grew up about 20 minutes away, is a town that's been decimated by a flood there last week, and also towns around the area. Forbes, I see out even as far as Condobolin, Cowra's been hit, Molong just near Orange as well. And Yugara though, 700 people, lives lost. And joining us now is someone who's, he's a club legend there at the Yugara Golden Eagles Rugby League Club. They compete in the Woodbridge Cup. And Andrew Barnes has kindly joined us on the line. Andrew, good morning to you.
G'day, boys. How are you going?
Yeah, go for it.
The Live Golf boys don't want to play a sand green tournament out of your garage, do they?
We'll get on the phone to Greg and give him a yell and see what he thinks.
How do you reckon they go, Cam Smith, are going to sand green?
He'd probably struggle, but you know what? I reckon he's the type of bloke who'd give it a go, mate.
Describe this devastation to us, Andrew, and what you've encountered.
Oh, mate, it's like, I don't know, like you've all seen the photos and the videos and stuff, but you just can't describe it. It's like it's the scenes are like, it doesn't happen in Australia, but it doesn't happen in Yugara. It's just been blown away. It's just, unfathomable, really.
Did you get an inkling that this could occur, and how quickly did it take off? And were obviously no one was prepared for it, but how did the circumstances unfold?
Just to clarify, I'm a Yugara boy, but I wasn't there at the time. I'm a little bit in Orange now. But talking to everyone, I mean, it floods all the time in Yugara, like all the time. And everyone knows a big flood, it'll go through these houses and everyone's ready. But the water, when it came down, from what we think has happened, there was a lot of canola crops, like either side of town and further up, and you can see in the pictures that it's all through town. And what we think's happened is it sort of held it up, like a bit of a wall, a bit of a dam wall.
Yeah.
And then when it's finally released, that's been the big push. And that's what they're all saying. It was just like a tsunami. And a few people have said the vision from Indonesia the other year is it's exactly what happened. So really, it was from 15 minutes from people looking at it, at water that's never, ever come to that side of town in history, to in 15 minutes grabbing their kids, other people's kids, dogs, whatever, jumping on roofs. Like, there was parents that were split from their own kids helping other people. The phones went down, so no one could ring. No one knew anything's going on. I mean, as tragic as the sad stories are of losing Di and Les, like, it's a miracle that there's not more we've lost. It's just, like, I don't know. It's unreal, to be honest.
The Premier sort of was out there. He's offered or to rebuild the town. He made a commitment. That gives you some hope. It doesn't fix the problem, but it's got to be, I suppose, a little bit more reassuring or a little bit more comforting when you hear things like that.
Yeah, the government and, I mean, to be honest, Australia, like, it's just been incredible, the help we've had. I mean, the local help, like anyone who's got a bobcat or a digger or who's a tradie, is just coming from everywhere. Like, it's a real good sign of who we are as Australians, I think. And it probably helps that we are a small town. I don't know if it makes any difference or not, but it's you can see it probably a lot easier. And I mean, it's such a small community, so any help is going to go a long way. So I mean, the town can't thank everyone enough. Like, it's just been amazing.
So what's needed now, Andrew? I mean, how can we help? How can our listeners help? What's needed there at Yugara and the surrounding communities, of course, as well?
I think it's going to be, like, the cleanup's going and it's ongoing and stuff, but I think it's probably going to be money, to be honest. Like, people out there aren't, like, most of them live a pretty simple life. Yeah. Like, they don't have money to build another house again or buy a new car and stuff. So, I mean, essentially, I think it's going to be cash. There's some fundraising pages and stuff to get into. There's, as the Old Boys Footy Club, we've just started off a jersey auction that we're doing through eBay each day. It's pretty nice. There's been jerseys hung around town in all sorts of spots. People are finding them in their muddy clothes and stuff. Yugara Gold Eagles jersey's been put around town for a bit of spirit and a bit of hope. Lots of people have been asking how they can get hold of one. So we've got tons of brand new ones because we're actually supposed to have our Masters tournament in October, which is one of the biggest events in Yugara now, but we actually had to cancel because we were worried about flooding a month ago, and now we don't have a footy field. There's no post left. There's no fence left. The shipping container with all the balls and tackle pads and stuff, we don't even know where that is. No one can locate it. So, so if people want to help with us through the footy, you can get on eBay and just type in Yugara Flood Relief Jersey, and that money's going to go directly to people in town. It's, that's the way we're trying to help through the footy, but, I don't know. It's sort of... sort of a bit unknown. It's sort of a bit up in the air about what's needed and where, like, exactly where the money is needed.
Has it receded at all, or has it started to recede? It's gone down, everyone's starting to sort of, you know, help out and do as much as they possibly can, and obviously funding is very, very important to the people in town. But I suppose, and again, I've never been through it, so I don't know. But I think you touched on it before, that great Aussie spirit. When times are tough, people just get in and go way above what they need to do. And I'm assuming that's how the community has rallied and tried to stay positive as much as they can. They just feed off each other.
Yeah, that's right. It's a bit of a... bit of a strange flood. Like, it goes up, but it goes down pretty quick. So it was even like the next morning, there was roadblocks, but we just drove straight past them coming in from Orange. We just went straight in to help. So it was pretty much down to do stuff straight away. But so that would have been the next day was people assessing. But the Wednesday, I don't know, there was so many people in town. Like, you were just, like, I went in to help my mate's place, and there was probably 15 people there. I don't know who they were. Some were in civilians, some were in rural fire clothes. You never met anyone's name. You just were just carrying fridges and all sorts of stuff out. And it was just, we thought we'd be doing it for days, just getting stuff out at his place. But it was all done in about an hour. Then we went to the next place. It was just, I don't know, it was just get in and get it done. But it was amazing to see. And the town can't be any more thankful for all the generosity.
And Andrew, it's not at the forefront at the moment, but you mentioned what the footy clubs lost there and the field and the posts and all your kit, etc. Tell us a bit about your club, and you compete in the Woodbridge Cup, and you're coming off a bit of a tough year this year.
Yeah, no, they had a bit of a tough year. I mean, it goes up and down. It just really depends on how many people in town, a lot of it, because they're such a small community. So we always rely on help from surrounding towns. So, yeah, Yagara, it's a pretty famous little club. We've had Ian Walsh and Barry Beast. They both actually played for Australia while they were playing for Yagara. Recent years, Brian Norrie won a premiership with the Storm. But, yeah, they've still got the record for the most Group 11 first grade premierships in a row back in the 60s. But it's just the little field. Like, it's, you can't describe it. I took a heap of photos. I have to put them up. Like the fence around it's just been ripped up, like, I don't know, it's been twisted around the back end of it. The scoreboard's still there. There's someone's car sitting on the try line down the pub end. It's just gone. Like, there's just nothing there. Like, you just can't imagine how it can happen. So I know they're getting some help already with the goal post, that sort of thing, but the shipping container full of everything. It even had some lights that we got years ago that we had intentions of putting up one day for training and maybe play night games, but they were in the container, so they're going to be destroyed as well. So it's, I don't know, it's crazy.
Yeah, devastating. So just a reminder for anyone who wants to help out, you're telling us go to eBay and just type in search for Yagara Flood Relief Jersey. That's one way we can help so far.
Yeah, and I guess if people want to contact you guys, they can put in contact with me with other means. Like, we can definitely help out. So, and I don't know whether the Australian curling team of the Olympics are coming up, want to come out and do some scouting, because there's some pretty good broom work on some slippery surfaces. So I think some very good techniques.
So. Love it. Well, Andrew, mate, thanks for, you know, bringing us up to date with what's going on there, and you know, a lot of our listeners certainly out there as well. So, thinking about everyone concerned, really appreciate it, and we'll chat soon.
Legend. Thanks, guys. Appreciate the support.
We're going to speak to Ali Mosley, actually, shortly from Sky Racing to break down the weekend's meeting in Kembla Grange. The Gong won by Rhea Deedy, of course. By the way, the multi-loss, so close. So
pretty wild finish second. And I think Brutality finished fifth. Fifth. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I think he finished fifth.
It's a blow.
Yeah.
You went top three, didn't you?
Yeah.
Place.
Mm.
Yeah, it came right down the outside.
It was the widest runner.
And it looks like it might have been, well, it closed pretty well.
Mm.
How did the Brutality boys take it?
Oh, they were disappointed.
Well, we had one listener who was blowing up Deluxe about you putting Brutality into the multi, so I'm wondering how the owners took it. Did you cop abuse?
No, I didn't cop abuse.
As a general rule, how's it been going, the multi?
Well, it won last week.
You've been strong throughout the year. If you gave yourself a rating during the year, we're getting close to the end of the year. What are you giving yourself out of 10?
Well, it's got to be over 50%. Because, as I've said on this program a number of times, Stu, if you put the same amount of money on every week, you would be in front.
Right. Very good. So 7.5?
Oh, I'd go a bit higher. Well, it's a win. You're not losing.
Okay. 8.5.
Yeah, I can accept 8.5. I thought you might have been a bit more generous. But anyway, I'll take
it. It's out of 10. We're getting close to the top.
Yeah.
Hey, I'll give yourself a 9. Give yourself a 9, mate.
If you win, mate, no one else is going to give me a 9. No one else is going to give me an 8.5. No one else is going to give me a 7. No one will give me a 5. On this program, Stewie. So right. I can't give it to myself.
8.5 it is.
I should be out of a
8.5, question mark 9.
Yeah.
Mate, I think you've done all right this year.
Oh, thanks, overall. Mr.
Sincerity. You feel confident now?
I think you've done all right.
Yeah.
No, you've got good to see you got the back in your chair.
Yeah, 3 and 4 weeks there. But people got short memories when it comes to Loz's multi because he cops a torrent of abuse.
Yeah, he cops a lot of abuse. I listen in the car on the way to work and you do cop a lot of stuff.
Do I? What's the messages come in now?
Just on the text line, morning fellas, just a special mention to all the Samoan supporters that took the loss on the chin. We're singing the Australian National Anthem in the streets after the match. Obviously, you very rarely see or hear something like that cheeseburger sending that one through. But yeah, they were great scenes in some of those communities, weren't they? And they obviously got together and in various locations around Liverpool, Mount Druitt, Rudy Hill, etc. And it looked like the party went on for hours.
It was going on yesterday afternoon at 3 p.m. The game was on. 12 hours later, it was still going on.
We've got Julie on the line. G'day, Julie.
Hi, how are you?
Yeah, really well, thanks. What do you want to talk about this morning?
Oh, well, I know I'm a bit late, but I just wanted to do a villain and...
Go for it.
Yeah, Samoa. They just fought to the very end, and I thought they were great.
Yeah, well, we were just talking about their supporters. How good was it to see them all get together and celebrate?
It was. It was great. It really was, yeah. And poor Gallen, I'm just over him boxing.
Oh, he's got his farewell fight this week, doesn't he?
Oh, does he, Gal?
Is it?
Farewell. How many farewells?
Is he fighting Hodjo this
Hodjo
week?
Hodjo this week, yeah.
Yeah, right. He's fighting him again.
Oh, jeez. Oh, well, we'll see how he goes.
Okay. All right. Thanks for calling back, guys.
Good on you, Julie.
Good on you, Julie.
Good on you, Julie.
Thank you. You're in the mix.
That's right. I forgot about that.
Call him a grub. Grubs. They're all grubs.
Who was calling who a grub?
Gallen called him a grub, didn't he? Or Hodjo called Gallen a grub. And there's a lot of grubs going backwards and forwards and a bum and a no good and...
Yeah, they brought the footy careers into it. That's my life. You're a pretender. You're a myth. Yeah, you're a nobody. Oh, brilliant. One of the brutality boys has texted, you can't win from last middo. We still partied hard. Celebrate a win and a loss. Go the brute for the Ingham, says Berto. Coming up, a couple of weeks' time. We've got Gary. G'day, Gary.
Hello, boys.
How are you, Gaz?
Good, mate. Hastings for Newcastle, right? I think he's a good buy for Newcastle because I think he can work those forwards. So you go back over the last 20 years, there's no halfback. But we've always had good fullbacks. If you look at just over the years, fullbacks have always held their own. Very good fullbacks in a lot of clubs where you can't name 3 or 4 good halfbacks and there's 17 teams. You know, you can't really name them. So we dropped off on halfbacks. I just want to make a point there. I don't think Newcastle need a fullback. I think Ponga there with Hastings does all the work, works the forwards, and Hastings does his thing. Ponga does his thing with the run into a hole, run off someone's hip, put someone in a hole, who passes a beautiful ball out long. You know, I think that's where the points are for Newcastle. Can I just mention Stephen Crichton? I think he's a big-time player. I like how he played in the World Cup. And he'd be a good buy, someone like Canterbury, for a winger, centre, fullback. I know Canterbury need a halfback, but they're hard to find, very hard.
Yeah, I think he wants to play fullback, Stephen Crichton. And talk about big game player. I think he's scored in the last 3 grand finals. He scored in the World Cup final. He can produce a bit of magic when he needs to. Fullbacks are very important, and you're right. Fullbacks sort of have changed a lot. The way they play, and I mean, John from Wingen text in early about how he rates Tedesco now as good as anyone that he's seen. But when you think about what Teddy does and how he plays, he's like an extra forward.
Yeah.
It's not sort of that out the back, catch pass, 3-on-2 situation, put a winger away or put a centre away. It's more about 24, 25 carries. It'd be like what Dylan Edwards does. You wouldn't say Dylan Edwards was the most naturally gifted player.
Yep.
But what he's able to do for his footy team has been enormous.
And then go out and play out the back as well. So you do the hard yards.
But a lot
yards.
Of them, your Dylan Edwards and Tess, they don't do that a lot.
Yeah.
Whereas Latrell Mitchell does. Billy Slater, to me, he did everything. Mm. He did it all through the middle and on the edge. But it's amazing now the fullbacks, their responsibility is carrying the ball, whether it's in yardage or around that middle of the field, to get those quick play the balls for others, or yardage or quick play the balls for others to work off.